as one Liberal minister said to me, you know, how can you go wrong if you're telling people they're doing it tough or finding it hard? What was interesting to me is that Scott Morrison came out almost the day after and really pushed back against this idea that inequality is worsening against, I think, figures and numbers.
Numbers, but against data.
Yeah.
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of Australian Politics Live, the podcast. I am still Catherine Murphy, political editor of Guardian Australia, and the lady sitting across from me in Pod Central is...
Gabriel Chan, political correspondent with Guardian Australia.
Yes, indeed. And here we are back with you. First thing we should say before we head off into Chatsville, stroll purposefully into Chatsville, is apologies. We have been slightly off the air in a slightly chaotic winter recess, which is conveniently the subject of our conversation today. Winter, colon, what gives? Question mark.
Now is the winter of our discontent.
Exactly.
Murfaroo. As Malcolm calls you, Murfaroo.
Oh, God, why does that happen? Anyway, never mind. The resumption of Parliament is literally in sight. It's just over the horizon. But before we get to next week and the resumption of Parliament, we just want to take a moment, largely for our own edification and hopefully for yours as well, to try and sort of piece together what has happened during the winter recess, which is normally a sort of relatively calm period, but has been, well, less calm.
Less calm. I think all around the government, I think.
Yes.
Well, so all the action is in the government.
Yeah. Well, let's start there. So if we had to just sort of describe in reasonably straightforward fashion the winter for the government, go, Gabby, what would you say?
I'm thinking Berlin Wall. I'm thinking there's been outbreaks of division that has now descended into, you know, pretty open throwing of Molotov cocktails between moderates and conservatives. And the reason I'm thinking that is, you know, when I think of July, I'm thinking of the Liberal Party conference.
Yes, let's start there.
So the Liberal, was it the convention first?
Convention.
Where Christopher Pyne, the leader of the House, senior government minister, goes off on a frolic in the Cherry Bar.
Best name ever.
In Darling Harbour about, you know, the fact that he always was a, you know, moderate and always voted for Malcolm Turnbull in every leadership ballot and, hey, don't lose hope on marriage equality,
because we're
almost there and we might even be there sooner than you think. Yeah. To which, you know, obviously it was, I'm told there were more than 100 people there, so why he thought that this wouldn't be recorded on everyone's smartphone.
Pocket recording device.
Yes. Anyway, he didn't. And it really started was the opening salvo of the winter of discontent.
The winter war, which has gone on and on and on, of course, with sort of brief lulls where everybody is determined they might talk about something else for, I don't know, 20 seconds or so before reverting to the mantra about same-sex marriage in the government, which seems to be various government people saying constantly, this is not at all an important issue. I don't know why we're talking about it. But it's simultaneously become clear that it's such an important issue that if anybody actually tries to do something about it, then that will result in an open civil war in the governing party of Australia and literally people burning the house down and extracting all sorts of retributions. So that's really been the winter, I think, of the government kind of slugging it out. How do we see this developing? Obviously, we don't want to make hard and fast predictions given Parliament's back next week and there are several days obviously between now and then. But just in general terms, Gabby, how do you see this panning out?
Well, it used to be that the moderate faction, which supports Malcolm Turnbull, were quite softly, and, you know, if the reverse happened under a Tony Abbott leadership, the Conservatives would be all over it, everyone like a rash, and saying, this is outrageous. How can you be, you know, fluffing your wings and throwing the hurling these bombs at us? Mm. But I gather just moderates now say, well, bugger it. You know, like we're always keeping quiet over our issues. Why do we need to keep, you know, keep a lid on our stuff when they can just throw things around willy-nilly? And I think that sentiment strikes me as quite a kind of dangerous sentiment coming into the first sitting week back, first party room, usually on a Tuesday.
Yeah.
Remember the last party room on marriage, for example, was what, 7 hours or something?
Yes, 2015.
Went on for...
Yeah, it was about seven.
Yeah,
seven
they actually had to break and do parliamentary stuff and then come back. It was so long.
And they finished it in quite an unfulfilling fashion in the sense that there wasn't actually a vote taken, and Tony Abbott sort of came out to describe the mood of the room, which was that there would be a plebiscite and that's that. And that sort of summation has been sort of prosecuted sotto voce in the opening phases, like behind the scenes. This issue has been prosecuted almost from that moment in 2015 without resolution. And so it is really difficult because obviously, you know, the government might end up throwing a postal plebiscite out there so the right can save face. I mean, that is the only reason to do a postal plebiscite, which is possibly, I think, the most absurd concept that we have ever heard in Australian politics. I know that's a big call, but like... No, but seriously, have you heard of a more absurd concept?
No, I haven't. I really haven't. I really haven't because, you know, how many ways could this thing be gamed? And as a result, how many ways can this thing be challenged?
Mm.
And it's not binding.
Exactly.
And, you know, it's a fig leaf.
It is exactly that. It's exactly that. It's a fig leaf, basically. So it's sort of like the writer is sort of into two minds in a funny sort of way, I reckon, right? There's sort of the Eric Abetz right, which clearly wants to frustrate the cause of legalisation of same-sex marriage at every turn, and at least he's honest about it, really, I think, in terms of that. And there's sort of other elements of the right that understand that the government really has to try and resolve this issue in some sort of a way where everyone can put the weaponry down. So, but one has to have a plebiscite for whatever reason. Oh, God, well, the last one didn't work. Let's try this postal plebiscite. But the critical thing, I think, is and where the actual fight will happen, even if they can sort of manufacture a truce with this ridiculous postal plebiscite, the real fight is what the policy is for the next federal election, whether or not the Liberal Party is permitted to move to a conscience vote position at the next election or before, basically, as soon as the whatever the plebiscite, you know, is resolved, then they can move on and have a vote. And whether or not, you know, whether or not they'll be permitted to land that position is sort of not entirely clear to me.
Mm.
But if they don't, it's sort of like I don't know how this then just doesn't become yet another phase of warfare. You know, where it's just, well, I shouldn't say that because, of course, if Labor wins the next election, it doesn't become a new phase of warfare because Bill Shorten is the Prime Minister and the Labor Party legislates within 100 days for same-sex marriage and the numbers are either there or they're not. So, I mean, there's that, and so maybe that's the way to resolve it. But if we're assuming that the governing party has still got at least some prospect of being a governing party into the future, they've got to resolve this, don't they? Like somehow.
The other element, of course, of this is the coalition partner split.
Yes, quite.
So the Nats v the Libs on this. So you've got the Libs v the Libs within the Liberal Party, moderates versus Conservatives, and then you've got now Nats coming out in various kind of sorties. And just today, well, a couple of weeks ago, to start from the beginning, National Senator Barry O'Sullivan mm-hmm. took a motion to the Queensland LNP convention. Mm-hmm. Remember, the two parties there merged in 2008.
In Queensland. Yeah.
So they are all LNP members, mm-hmm. one happy family.
Not.
So Senator O'Sullivan takes his motion in order to mark the boundary, mark the line, don't step over this, Liberal Party, which allowed then the LNP president, Queensland president, to write to all members saying, you know, we don't approve of anyone straying outside of this policy. I'm looking at you, Warren Ench, and you, Trevor Evans, the two supporters of same-sex marriage. Mm. And so now we've got the whole coalition split on top of the Lib-Lib split.
Mm, exactly. Yeah, so we've got the Nats as a single entity and their views. We've got the Libs as a single brackets, divided, perpetually closed brackets set. And then, as you say, there's the LNP as well. So we've sort of it's clash of multiple clans. Mm. So anyway, so that's really been the winter, hasn't it, for the government?
That's been the winter for the government.
That's pretty much it. Mm-hmm. It's pretty much the long and short of it. Mm-hmm. So yeah, anyway, go figure. So Labor, we need to think about Labor and Bill Shorten's winter.
Yes. Yeah. He's a lot quieter these days, have you noticed? Have you noticed the media strategy?
Oh, no, strangely.
Go for it, boys and girls.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, don't let us interrupt your delightful jamboree over there. Yes, he has. It's true, he's sort of stepped up Shorten over the winter variously, which we'll get into. Like there's been strategic episodes of stepping up, but the kind of rat on a rat wheel daily, here I am before the television cameras just to give you some sort of grab for the nightly news. They certainly don't feel the need to do that at the moment, do they?
No, and I think, you know, it's to be commended.
Well, sure.
I think well, I mean, not just for his own political terms, but I've noticed the Prime Minister's been doing the same thing, trying to slow down, not every day. I'm not going to appear every day in front of you. Having said that, he's just appeared every day in the last couple of days while he's been in WA. But that's a specific.
That's an objective.
Yes.
Yeah.
But there is a kind of, it looks like there's an attempt to kind of slow it down and not be Eddie everywhere on both sides.
Yes.
But, yes, Shorten has been out. He's been talking inequality and I think he's trying to get out ahead on some policy issues to present as, you know, the party with ideas.
Mm. Well, the party with ideas and also the party that can translate ideas into campaignable structures, I think, is the sort of broad objective. It's funny because there has been an internal blue in Labor, not on the scale of the government's same-sex marriage blue, nothing that epic or, you know, it's not sort of not like Goodfellas, but there has been a rolling discussion in Labor ranks about economic policy basically and how progressive and muscular your economic policy is for the next election. And members of the left and one prominent member of the right, Wayne Swan, have been really pushing Shorten and Chris Bowen, his shadow treasurer, to be more assertively progressive on tax policy, on a whole bunch of policies. And we saw a little bit in the opening phase of this little bit of pushback from Chris Bowen. But now, I mean, there's still the same pushback in the sense that we will decide the parameters of how muscular we're going to be in economic policy. But they have picked it up over the winter. I think they've taken a decision, Labor, that inequality is a highly campaignable issue over a range of different fronts on tax, on labour market regulation and reform, on sort of the issue which is the barbecue stopper, work insecurity and wages stagnation, that you can pull all of these things together and also activate your base, activate the trade unions, activate progressive activists, all that sort of stuff, so that you can start to build a story, a picture that that not only is kind of broadly on the zeitgeist in terms of what people are actually talking about, but that you can marshal a field army to stand up with you in the event, you know, obviously when the election rolls down. What do you think about it in terms of whether it's succeeding or not?
I think it's succeeding because it is on the zeitgeist. I mean, and as one Liberal minister said to me, you know, how can you go wrong if you're telling people they're doing it tough or finding it hard? What was interesting to me is that Scott Morrison came out almost the day after and really pushed back against this idea that inequality is worsening against, I think, figures and numbers.
Numbers, but against data. Hey, no, yeah. Well, it's sort of like, in a way, I do feel slightly sorry for Scott Morrison in a little way. The sort of point he was trying to make that, look, this is complicated and look, if we look at different data sets, they tell us different things and the position in Australia sort of relative to other countries like America and continental Europe where the GFC triggered a major sustained recession, which made inequality go like that. I'm making a gesture, listeners, that's sort of like 2 points on a compass, like at opposite ends, right? There's sort of been factors in other economies that have sort of really pushed inequality out in quite, well, savage ways, not just minor ways, but actual savage ways. And poor old Scott Morrison with all the Treasury arsenal behind him will be sort of in that mode of thinking that, oh, well, actually, it's not as bad as it is elsewhere, or this data set suggests it's not too bad, but this other one, you know what I mean? They sort of go into some seminar mode and they kind of forget. It's kind of like, mate.
Well, exactly. We're talking domestic, and of course his audience is domestic.
Yeah, exactly.
And the other thing is, you know, we just spent years going through the listening to the coalition during the Labor years about, you know, how bad the economy was when Australia sort of semi-survived the GFC.
Dodged the bullet. Yeah. I mean, didn't in the sense that obviously if you look at what income growth has done in post-GFC in Australia, it's just gone
flat bleh. As a pancake.
Bleh. Yeah. Right. So which is sort of the source of people not feeling good about their circumstances. It's that they've got high levels of job insecurity, everybody's buffeted by technological disruption, everybody knows the robots are coming, and their own bargaining power is not huge, and wages growth has flatlined, and they can't see how where the change in the weather, the positive change in the weather, will come from. That's really the nub of the issue. And Morrison can kind of stand there in some sort of uber technocratic way and say, well, you know, you're talking about inequality, but you know, it's not actually accurate. The narrative you're presenting is not actually accurate, but it's just not going to work because it's out of sync with people's lived experience. But there are risks though, don't you? Can you see risks in Labor's strategy? I can see a couple.
What are they?
Well, it's sort of like I think it does work. I think it works provided you keep your conversation within bounds where it doesn't look like that you're in essence presenting as a shop front for the trade union movement, or that there's some other agenda standing behind what you're saying, that there are puppet masters who are manipulating a particular political line, which you are meekly presenting as the salesman, the Bill Shorten salesman, but you're actually like the front of the firm, that behind you are a bunch of kind of, you know, people who are interested in completely wild-eyed redistribution, or people, or that you're a puppet of the trade union. So I don't think this is a kind of... I don't think this is a dire point outside the opinion pages of The Australian and the echo chamber of 2GB, but it's still a balance. I think. If you push it too hard, and you've just got to hit the right sweet spot, I think. Over-egging it may not quite deliver what you want it to. It might get people looking at you in a way that reinforces your pre-existing negatives, if that makes sense. And one thing that was interesting about our latest essential poll, now it's a very small sample, which is, you know, why should not be made of it, but since March, in terms of the way Labor voters are looking at Shorten, since March, he's gone backwards quite a lot. Now, I don't think that's any sort of referendum on their agenda, because I think the same poll showed very strong community support for Labor's agenda. But still, there is this hesitation factor about Shorten that the data tells us is there, right? The polls tells us is there. Mm. So he's got to be believable on the message, and he's got to look as though this is a fair dinkum thing that he personally is invested in, rather than a line that you present as a politician to sort of basically carry the interests of the firm, for want of a better word.
Mm.
And so he's shortened that guy that sort of can persuade people in a compelling way that this is a from the head, the heart, the gut proposition, what he's saying. Anyway, I honestly think that's an open question. I really do.
Mm. One of the things I was interested in your last column was that idea of we've now kind of coasted into this post-aspirational world. Mm. So it used to be that, you know, everyone could see a path for themselves to a future that had greater economic benefit.
Yep.
And now we don't.
Now
we just want to keep our head above water.
Mm.
And actually, can I just have the same salary package that I've had for the last 10 years
or not get sacked whatever, you know, just still have a job tomorrow.
Yeah, yeah.
It's actually a very interesting piece. I mean, this is why I get very frustrated about the government and the kind of the vacancy in the government's agenda, not only because of, you know, just perpetual stupid infighting and kind of tribal stuff, but there's no evidence. It's quite frustrating to me that there's no evidence of any really serious economic thinking in the government show. It's sort of like all around the world, political parties are trying to contemplate their responses to economic thinking in the wake of the global financial crisis. All around the world this is happening. And it seems as though the government is sort of content, at least on current information, to keep trotting out the same formulations. I read quite an interesting piece. I think it was called, just if people want to chase it up, and stupidly I've stumbled into this anecdote and forgotten her name, but she's the leader of the Scottish Conservative Party, and she wrote an essay recently that I think is called Control-Alt-Delete-Capitalism or something like that. And it's not any great, you know, wow, sort of Gesundheit moment in that essay, but it's really thoughtful. It's really, well, here we are. We are centre-right people. We believe in free markets. We believe in, you know, that whole kind of way of thinking and constructing economies and societies, but people don't anymore. And so we've got to respond. We've got to understand that there's a shift. There's a shift between what we think is okay and what voters think is okay. And we've got to start bringing that together. And that means us as centre-right politicians have got to think about this seriously, not just kind of hurl off formulations and pat people on the head and say the old ways of doing are perfectly fine, you're just too stupid to know. We've actually got to, if we want to save capitalism, we've got to reboot our entire way of thinking. And like I say, I don't think she produced anything marvellous and shiny by way of a new thought, but it was just a really, really thoughtful piece of thinking from a centre-right politician. And we just, where is that? Where is the evidence of that? It drives me nuts.
Well, yeah, economically, the coalition might be, well, they were dragged to the left slightly in the last budget, weren't they?
Well, that's the thing. It's sort of like...
But socially, they're being pulled to the right.
It's sort of like it doesn't quite, you know, it doesn't quite gel. And it's sort of like, and it's that constraint on the Prime Minister always, that it's sort of like, you know, if he wants to have any sort of adventurism in any direction, you know, here's a problem that I'm going to identify and try and solve. It's like he's got 100 people kind of hanging off him, pulling him back down into the sort of tidal sludge. It seems very, very difficult. I don't know how you break that cycle. But on the economic front, there's not, I don't know, maybe they're doing a million fascinating things behind the scenes, but it's not very obvious if they are. I mean, seriously. Anyway, sorry, that was quite a long rave. Anyway, we should wrap up. Obviously, Parliament resumes next week.
It does.
And so does, drum roll please,
Politics Live. Where I will type my fingers to the bloody bones.
She will. They'll be down to little stumps. Tibbity type type. She'll be bringing you the rolling
like
political developments.
Gif. No, the Kermit.
It's Kermit. No, yeah, it's Kermit. It's totally Kermit. But no, Gabby will be filing the developments in national affairs literally in 10-minute increments for many hours at a stretch. So make sure you go to the Guardian Australia website and tune in for all the developments, which, you know, we're not going to predict because hell. God,
it's like, game.
Well, it's days. I mean, anything could happen. Like, yeah. You may scoff, listeners, but that is actually the world we inhabit. It is days. Anything could happen.
The other thing that's coming up is the Garma Festival, where yes. We might see some sort of movement yes. on constitutional recognition and the Uluru Statement. I just throw that in.
Throw that one
by
out
the
then.
Way, in between now and then is
yeah, that thing
is Garma.
That thing. And also, of course, the great unresolved energy problem that the government still got. We haven't touched on that at all. Remember
yeah.
that? Remember that?
Mm.
Yeah. So, you know, that's all
got
to come.
Got to land that plane.
Yes, exactly. Got to land the
plane. By Christmas.
That's right. That's
weather. Otherwise the Christmas lights won't come on.
Exactly. Well, quite the Christmas lights won't come on anyway here. Yes, anyway. So, look, anyway, lots of reasons to tune back into politics next week. If for some reason you've just been too disgusted to tune in for the entire winter, you can tune in next week and be disgusted all over again. Yeah.
Good night.
She's smiling. She's smiling.
Good night.
To translate, she's smiling. Anyway, let's go. That's enough. But I should nail the apology first. We have been a little bit off sequence in terms of our production, and I apologise for that because lovely people who listen to us regularly do tweet and Facebook and so on and say, when are you coming back? And there's not always a simple or straightforward answer to that question, but it's largely a function of an extremely busy and chaotic winter recess period in the Parliament. And Gabby and I also just briefly having a week. Remember when we had a week off?
We did.
It sort of feels like about three centuries ago.
The beginning of July.
Yeah, God. Oh, anyway.
Very good.
Sorry, diverting. Life matters. So it's partly that and partly because it's been very chaotic and we've had a couple of our colleagues away in the Bureau as well, which has meant that we've just been a little bit extended on the news business. Thank you so much for listening. We are very grateful as always. And here comes the little patter at the end of every podcast, if I can remember it. If you can subscribe to us using your favourite podcast app. If you subscribe via iTunes, don't forget to leave us a rating or a review. As we say to you periodically, track us down on our social media platforms and presences. If you have any thoughts about the podcast or what you might want to hear or who you might want us to try and wrestle into our pod cupboard, we're always very glad to have those suggestions.
Keep it nice.
And well, nice is optional. This is the internet. Anyway, yes, try and keep it nice. That's always better. Speaking of nice, the marvellous Miles Martignoni, thank you, the producer of this podcast. We're very grateful to him for pulling it together as always. He does lots of other interesting stuff for Guardian Australia, including Behind the Lines and a podcast that is coming up called
Common Ground.
Yes, it's a new thing.
You've really got to listen to it when it lands.
When it lands. We're not quite sure when it lands, but soonish, I think. Yes.
Soonish.
Yes. And it's kind
ordinary
of.
Ordinary people. Ordinary
yes.
people.
Yeah, I gather. Ordinary
Fantastic.
People. Yeah, talking about politics.
It's a really, really good
ways.
Concept.
Yes, absolutely. So we are, Gabby and I, very much looking forward to listening, and we're sure you are as well. And we'll, when that gets closer to take off, we'll tell you more about it or do something so that you know where to find it. So, so adios, really. Until next week, take care of yourselves. Put on your crash helmets because it's all coming back.
See ya.